Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Family Forever Child's Conversations on Care podcast. My name's Amanda Griffith, and I'm the CEO at Family Forever Child. This podcast is a space where we can hear directly from practitioners about how they are providing care to vulnerable children and families around the world. Family Forever Child is a growing network of 45 local civil society organisations working on the ground in 38 countries. These organisations have a wealth of knowledge and experience from years of working with children and communities to develop solutions to improve children's care. In today's podcast, we'll be exploring the context for children and young people with care experience in New Zealand. So there are over 23,000 children in New Zealand who don't live in their home of origin, in part due to reasons for child neglect and abuse, parental drug abuse, mental illness, incarceration, or the death of their parents. Yet under a quarter of these children live in estate care, and others are cared for by other loving family members or caregivers who've become their legal guardians. Importantly, and one thing I think we'd like to explore, is that 57% of children in state care are children of Maori descent. The majority of New Zealand's population of 5 million people are of European descent, and the Indigenous Maori are the largest minority. New Zealand is a country of particular importance for Family Forever Child because we actually are very well supported by New Zealand donors that support our work. And Family is currently supporting the work of a steering group of New Zealand-based organisations, which Voice is a member of, to develop a regional programme that will benefit children and families in New Zealand and ultimately extend to the wider Pacific region. Today, I'm delighted to welcome Tracy and Tupua to our podcast. Tracy is the CEO of Voice. We will hear more from Tracy about the meaning of the name Voice, and which was designed by children with care experience for children with care experience. And it exists to advocate for the approximately 6,000 children in New Zealand with care experience, be that foster care or kinship care or wana care. And Tupua is their national care experience lead at Voice. Tracy and Tupua, thank you so much for joining me today. And perhaps just to open it up, could you, Tracy, start to expand a bit more on my rather brief introduction to Voice and just get to us about the journey of your organisation and its focus?
Kia ora, good morning. I'd be delighted to talk a little bit about Voice Whakarongo Mai. We are an organisation that was established after some fairly serious changes in government policy and direction for the care of children back in 2015. But we also came about because we'd been lobbying for change as a group of providers, care providers and young people. Some change to the way in which care was organised in New Zealand, ensuring that young people had a voice in the system. So it was a wondrous moment, I guess, when the government talked about partnering with us to get a perspective on what this organisation could look like. So we embarked on a kind of a journey with philanthropy who funded the position of the NGO sector so that we could have young people at the table, and it allowed a whole lot of movement for us to travel and to engage with young people outside of government's mandate. And then we worked alongside government to establish an organisation that would be a conduit between the community, young people and government to inform policy, inform direction, and to ensure that young people's voices were heard. So we were established as an independent organisation, an independent non-government organisation, but with a really strong link and some parliamentary enablers to make sure that we could exist and have access to young people. So it was a very unique beginning and a really powerful one, because young people were such a part of it's. I don't even feel comfortable calling it a co-design process, because it was just such a wonderful partnership, and that's different to a co-design theoretically, co-designs are probably the right word, but what we had was a really magical way of getting young people actually driving a lot of the direction that we took. And Tupua, who you're going to be talking to this morning as well, was part of that with me. So we've had this long journey together. So that's kind of a brief synopsis of it. We opened our doors to the public, I guess, in 2017, alongside some other major changes that the government had put in place. And it was to partner with the new direction. So we had some shaky beginnings, of course, because we opened the door and we didn't actually have a chief executive, or we just had a board and a steering committee, but a whole lot of optimism and hope for a better future for young people.
Great, Tracy. And Tupua, so what was it like for you to join this? What prompted you to get involved, and what does that, from your perspective, what's that journey been like?
Yeah, my journey has been an interesting one. You know, my advocacy began with an opportunity of confronting politicians who were responsible for some of the negative experiences I had growing up. So that's what got me into advocacy. What kept me into advocacy was understanding that we can use our experiences to create constructive, positive change for future generations. Well, my journey with Voice was interesting as well. Tracy will second that. It was a new space altogether, but it was really encouraging to see all different groups of society coming together for our Kiwi kids. As Tracy mentioned, philanthropy, government, non-government, just people who actually care, was something that, you know, five-year-old, six-year-old me never knew existed. And to be working alongside such an awesome mix of people with a common purpose was, yeah, it was challenging, but it was so worth it.
And have you seen any changes that have happened through the work of Voice already? I mean, Tupua and Tracy, how have you seen the dial change by virtue of what Voice has been able to do in terms of advocacy?
Well, absolutely. I think, and what's really great about some of these examples that I can provide here is that they were driven by care experience young people. Mm-hmm. And I believe, anyway, more often than not, our goal is to prevent things from happening, which is quite difficult to, you know, it was quite difficult for me in the beginning when you don't see, you know, the product of your work, because it's in that prevention space. So an example would be, we managed to prevent a piece of legislation, a bill passing, that would have had a seriously negative impact on young people around youth justice. You know, we advocated, we lobbied government, and it led to the Member of Parliament actually withdrawing the bill. So that's one example. Tracy, can
that's
you think
an amazing
of others?
Example. Yeah. I mean, that's really to be celebrated. That's fantastic. Yeah, sorry, Tracy, what are you going to say?
No, I think that's a beautiful example. There's some of the more intangible things too, like when we were doing some of the work. So one of the privilege that we had, and Tupua and I worked on this together with alongside an amazing woman who was the government representative, and we went around the country meeting with young people, and the biggest single thing that was told to us was the isolation that young people in care felt, just that they weren't connected with their care community. They felt like the oddity at school or in their community. And I think that's one of the changes I've seen that's harder to point to, but the collective community that's developing and the care experience strength that I'm seeing when Tupua leads a lot of this work, but when we ask for young people who are prepared to, who are interested in talking on a particular subject matter, we get people from all over, different places, who've connected to our kaupapa, and they've connected to our organisation in a way that would never have happened before. So that's something that's less visible maybe to other people, but that's one of the major changes I've seen, reducing isolation, feeling like there's something out there for other people to belong to.
As you say, that's, I mean, really fundamentally important is that sense of belonging. And I wondered, Tupua, if I could actually ask you also a bit more about this. I raised it in the introduction about the issue of the sort of significant overrepresentation of Maori children in the state care system. And Is that some what's structurally going on there, and what's your perspective on how the Maori worldview is being brought into the state care system, and what still needs to happen around that?
Yeah, look, you kind of touched on it basically in a single word. That's connection. At the heart of Te Ao Māori is connection to nature, to whānau, to community. You know, when as Māori we introduce ourselves, we speak of our ancestral mountains, rivers, oceans, canoes, people, and that connection is often lost when you enter the system. And that is one of the key functions of Voice Whakarongo Mai, is to build that sense of identity and belonging and build the community with a positive, there's stigma. There is massive stigma around being a child in care, and we're here to combat that. And as far as, as a Māori growing up in care, I didn't have that cultural connection for a long time, not until I was a teenager. And I found culture to be my grounding, actually. I think there are a number of reasons as to why there's such a massive over-representation of tangata whenua or Māori in our state care and protection system. You look at colonisation. Anywhere, actually. I don't think colonization only negatively affected Māori at all. It's global. It comes with that, the severing of ties, as I've mentioned, to land, to whānau. And then you shift it forward into the urbanization, where we're moving from a tribal sort of people living in villages and settlements and moving out into big cities where you don't have that support base that you've always had. Families don't live as close as they used to. I think there are massive, there are just so many reasons as to why. But I think I'll pass this one on to Tracy to speak more to. She's been around a bit more than me.
Just a little. I thought you covered it beautifully. I mean, I think we've been very conscious when we were developing and building Voice Whakarongo Mai to really talk about what the essential things were for Māori children. And the way we did that was to talk to Māori children and their families. I think the disconnection, I think it was beautifully, I think actually, Tapua, you've summed it up beautifully. I think one of the points about voice is it's taken on, when we were named, like when you're talking about voice, the words whakarongo mai, they mean hear me, listen to me. But it's a whole of sense thing. Hear me, listen to me, all of me, with your ears, with your heart, with your body. And that in itself is a Māori concept. And I think keeping that at the forefront, that we're not talking about young children just being separated from their parents in a state care system. We're talking about entire cultural, total cultural disconnection. It's probably been the most profound effect that I've seen on young people coming through today, really trying to find their identity. As a care person, a person who was raised in a situation away from whānau, and those who have been disconnected entirely from their cultural roots, Tapua.
Yeah.
Yeah, and just looking back on my experiences when I first was reconnected to our culture, it was the first time in my life, actually, that I had a reason to feel I had a reason to do good. Now, hearing about the stories of our ancestors, what they achieved, how they lived, the values, morals, why we do what we do, you felt a connection to something much bigger than yourself, which I think everybody needs. And at that time, I didn't have that. So, of course, I was a resentful, angry, isolated, lost young boy. And culture for me was just, it was healing, but it was refreshing. It gave me, the confidence to not fall through the gaps. And unfortunately, my mentor, he recently passed away, but I'll never forget the words, his honesty. He said, they have a plan for you. after you leave this care system, you'll go on to the justice system. You'll then go on to corrections. You know, so you have one of two options. Either you prove them right and act the fool, or you prove them wrong and you contribute to the legacy of your tupuna or your ancestors. And being able to see it that way at such a young age really did give me an advantage over so many others. Yeah.
Well, and also what you touched on there is, and it's part of the colonial history too, is that the concept of the state intervention is one of placing children in an institution away from all of the communities. And therefore, and as you say, so the unfortunate journey for many is, so they go into the care institution, they end up in the justice institution, and they're completely institutionalized and removed from the wider society and all of those sense of belongings and contributings that are so vitally important to a sense of self.
Yep. And colonization was the foundation of all of these crown institutions, which are making profit, making jobs and money on the back of our poverty, our pain and our suffering. It's as simple as that. There are so many gaps and it's all by design. I'm not for a minute confused about that at all. Generations of families have gone through these systems. We've had great Māori leaders provide advice to government. I mean, since before I was born, I mean, I'm reading some of these reports and go, oh my God, yes, this is the answer. But unfortunately, it's only gone as far as advising. The recommendations haven't always, and especially the ones that would have made really meaningful change, have not been picked up or implemented by government.
I think I could probably talk to that a little too. In 1989, there was a piece of legislation called the Children, Young Persons and Their Families Act, and it came out of a document called Poa Te Atatū, which is the Daybreak, and it was designed, it was led by a ministerial Māori review, and it was the legislation itself really the most stunning piece of, in its purest form, it's brilliant. It's everything that we're trying to do now. And it was really interesting. So I was around in that time, you'll be very pleased to know. And so it feels like a long time ago to me. I remember as a young social worker being incredibly hopeful and just knowing that this was going to make the difference. And I was not on my own. It was the general feeling. And some of it was implemented, and the really critical pieces were not, or they started some of it. I mean, family group conferencing, which we know originated in New Zealand and has got traction worldwide, was part of that golden piece of legislation. But like anything, people take the top off it and pick the things. They closed institutions en masse, but they didn't replace it with evolving community support and wraparound servicing. And they lost, and I think Māori lost an incredible amount with a piece of legislation that should have served them beautifully. And it's just, it's criminal, because we're now back looking at the very foundation of that document and saying, let's look at this, let's roll out, devolve power to the community, allow Māori whānau groups to and iwi to wrap around their people. I mean, it could have been done 30 years ago and a whole lot of people would not be in the pain that they're in now. So the legislation itself was brilliant. It's always going to be how something's executed, how something's implemented, how something's nurtured and cared for, and how the genesis is kept at the forefront. You know, it was that whole group were involved in the development of that from their experience and that of their whānau. And it's just incredibly disappointing that it's taken us full circle to sort of realise that that's what we need to do now. And that's what Tupu is talking about, being one of the people who got lost in that phase.
And yes. Tracy, what's your thinking about how to make that same mistake not happen again? I mean, because there is legislation out there, and is that going to be one that you think will be fully implemented and embodied? And what's needed to make that transition into the sort of vision and the aspiration that's held in legislation into the reality? What do you think is going to be key to happen over the next few years to make that not be the same cycle of aspiration not realised?
Well, I don't think it will be the same cycle of aspiration not realised, because we've got a really mobilised group of young people, like a massive following of young people who are speaking into this. And they are people who that system claims to be the corporate parent of, the whatever it is. But yeah, they have a responsibility. I think once you start a movement, it's very, very hard to slow it down. But I also think that there is a willingness. I mean, I think there's a willingness to ensure that young people get a voice. That's not always going to do it. I'm not naive enough to think that, yes, well, you know, everyone said it will happen. But there have been a few sort of critical changes. You're not going to slow that group of young people down. They've got momentum already. You've got a government who are thinking in this space and saying, actually, it needs to happen. But now you've got a very unsettled community who are saying no more. I mean, I think people are just shocked. And our state system has not served young people well. And that's well known. That's something that is felt and it's recognised in lots of part of the other parts of government, and also in our public eye, I think. So I'm going to say conscience. It's going to be a conscience thing. But I also think that the movement of young people such as Tupua, I mean, he is a fine leader, and there are a lot of other young people who are doing the work just like this, and they're keeping it at the forefront. So I don't want it to land with them. I don't want it to end up being their cross to bear, but I think they've made enough input and people are listening, and you can't get away from that. I mean, user experience, lived experience, how can you? Yeah, so I think that's going to be part of it. I think we've got, I can see Tupua's amping to add to this. So you go ahead, Tupua, and I'll add if I find something else.
I think I was just going to add around sort of the momentum that we have right now. And we also currently have a Royal Commission of Inquiry into Abuse in State Care Institutions underway. And this has been public. I gave evidence. But, you know, one of the shocking findings of the Royal Commission of Inquiry has been that over 250,000 Kiwi children have been abused at the hands of the state. And, you know, you turn on the news, people are hearing this. And, you know, it's stuff that everybody needs to know. This is the history of our country. This is what's been happening to our children at the hands of the state. Yeah, that's just all I wanted to add to that.
Yes, I think we're at a critical juncture for all those reasons. And I feel, it's a weird thing to have optimism come out of tragedy. I know it's not a new concept, but I believe that there has been enough saturation of the problems and the abuse and the exposure that young people have had that we're at that point. No, we can't go back. There's strong accountability levers and I think all political parties saying they need to do more in this space. So that's a piece I'm holding on to.
I see. Thank you. And this will just be my last question. It's absolutely fascinating. I'm sure everybody else, all the people listening to this will be saying, I want to ask more about this. This is fascinating. But this is the last question I've got the privilege to ask you both. And that is, I know, and you're talking about it already, but let's just focus in on this, is that advocacy is such a key part of what Voice does. And I'd really love to hear from Tupua, particularly about, so, you know, what is it about your current advocacy? What's your focus? And any insights you could share with others with care experience about how to get involved in advocacy, what the rewards are, what the challenges are from your perspective, to encourage other young people with care experience to become their own advocates for change.
Yeah, Hilda. So for me, our goal is always, and it always will be, amplifying the voices of those who aren't being heard or aren't being listened to by the system. You know, the most important voice around a care plan, around a care journey, is the voice of that young person, that child. This is their life. They're not just a case file. This is a human life. They have their own aspirations, their own values, and these things are critical to ensure, like, you know, the best possible decision making. The end goal, of course, is always improving the experiences of our children and young people that unfortunately can't live with their mother, their father, that need the state to intervene due to circumstances that have nothing to do with them, out of, you know, not their fault at all most of the time. And how you get involved in advocacy, I think it's honestly, it's just understand the value of your experiences. And I was faking it till I made it for the first few years, thinking, you know, who the heck am I coming up here, you know, telling these people what to do? I'm no politician, I'm no social worker. And actually, that's the advantage, is that your mind isn't so deep in systems. It's just solely on your experiences. And that is the game changer. You're speaking from what you've lived through, not what you've read, not what you've learned at university, what you have survived and what you have lived through. And look, you know, there's so many ways to advocate now. You've got social media platforms, you've got advocacy organizations I know around the world. I say, you know, back yourself, value your experience, and believe that you can contribute to change and the reduction of harm to other children and young people that may need the same sort of supports that you needed. To help improve the lives, essentially, of other children and young people. So reach out to those organizations, you know, have a say when you see, I mean, I know not everyone's a policy nerd or anything, but, you know, if you get into these circles, these things just come your way. So connect with people that are in the game, and just speak up, have a say, and put your experiences to use, you know, to bring positive changes to other children and young people.
Now, I have to say, I think that's an inspiring end to the conversation. And I just want to say to both you, Tapua and Tracy, thank you so much for just sharing about not just the context of New Zealand, but the absolutely fundamental importance of those with care experiencing, having their voice, as you say, Tapua, to their experience and the validity of that to inform the changes, and how powerful that is to hold government to account. And that Tracy's ambition and optimism and belief is that that's going to realize the changes in legislation that without that can falter and not succeed, but that as long as there is that incredibly powerful movement of those with care experience to ensure that their government delivers on their role of caring and protecting children, then that's something that could be really powerful for an inspiration for others. So I just want to thank you both for sharing your experiences and your wisdom and your inspiration with us. And so thank you both. Thank you for those of you joining us to listen to this conversation on Care Podcast. You can help us spread the word and encourage further in our conversation and activities by joining our community on the Changemakers for Children community platform, which is our own movement to bring together people who really want to realise change in the care system. And you can visit changemakersforchildren.community to register. And the more users there are, the stronger we will be. We hope you will join us next time. Thank you for listening, and goodbye.